Welcome to the Literary Escape Podcast, the only podcast that serves both readers and authors of historical Christian romance. We read, discuss, review, and rate books in this unique romance subgenre, and sprinkle in a few contemporary Christian suspense books. Authors, we bring you inside tips and tricks from those who have gone before you. Then we bring both readers and authors together for fun-filled live Q&As. Literary Escape is the one-stop shop for both readers and authors to connect, learn, and grow together. Let's dive into this adventurous episode. Welcome back, everyone, to another Friday book discussion. A few announcements before we dive in. Our next Coffee and Books event will be on October 5th from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Enjoy an hour of book talk with authors Julie Lessman, Misty Imbeller, and Lynn Shannon. This is a free event, but you do need to register to save your spot, so head on over to literaryescape.com/events to register today. We look forward to seeing you on October 5th. We are also running a survey during the month of September where readers can help us schedule our 2025 Coffee and Books events, vote for the best day and time, and then tell us which authors you would like to meet. The survey goes out each Friday in our newsletter. If you're not signed up, head on over to literaryescape.com/newsletter and sign up today. Authors, we are offering two sessions this month on writing book proposals. Kylie Woodley and Terry Whalen will be joining us on September 14th and 19th. If you cannot make it to one, then join us for the other or both, as these two experts share the how and why behind writing a book proposal that catches the eye of an agent. Full details and registration can be found at literaryescape.com/events. These events are free for our editing HCRW members and just $17 for anyone who would like to join the training session. We hope to see you there. The Unwavering Faith crowdfunding campaign is off to a great start. I'm thankful for everyone who has purchased a book, and at the time of this recording, we are just 37 books away from unlocking the first bonus item. Please consider sharing this campaign with others as we work toward the goal of publishing Unwavering Faith. A huge thank you to Julie Williams for purchasing a limited edition copy of Unwavering Faith. I want to congratulate one of our very own HCRW members, Carrie Hakadurian, for winning the ACFW Genesis Award in the historical category. This is a huge accomplishment and well-deserved, as Carrie is an outstanding author. I have no doubt we will be seeing more from her soon. I encourage our listeners to follow Carrie's journey by signing up for her newsletter at the link provided in the show notes. We also had several author friends who were finalists in the ACFW Carol Awards. Authors Sarah Sundin, Linda Samaritan, Hannah Linder, Misty Imbeller, and Lynn Blackburn. Congratulations, ladies, for being finalists, and congratulations to Lynn Blackburn for winning the Carol Award for the Romantic Suspense category. Be sure to follow these amazing authors by signing up for their newsletter. Links to each of their websites are listed in the show notes. All right, that's it for announcements. Let's jump into this week's author interview with Julie Lessman. Welcome back, everyone. Excited to have Julie Lessman here with us this Friday to talk about her Heart of San Francisco series, which if you've been listening the last 3 weeks, or no, 4 weeks, we've covered each book in that series plus her novella. So excited to sit down and talk with her and just get some insights on the series. So welcome, Julie.
Hey. Nice to see you, and hey, everybody.
We've had Julie on a few times already. I think this might be our third interview together.
Yeah, third or podcast. Fourth. I mean, we've had quite a few.
Yeah. Well, I love talking to you, Julie, and getting insights. And this is a series that's set in the early 1900s, mm-hmm. right? So it's a little... newer. I say newer than what a genre that we typically hit, but we absolutely loved it. Your characters were outstanding as usual, but we always want to know the author when we talk to the author is who was your favorite or favorite characters. You can have more than one in this series.
Well, hands down, I mean, I'm 73, okay? So hands down, my favorites are the, you know, the older couple, Uncle Logan, Logan mm-hmm. McClair, and Caitlin McClair, his sister-in-law, who he was engaged to, 25, 30 years prior, and he cheated on her, and she found out and ended up breaking it off. And then the older brother kind of, you know, who was a very godly man, he kind of, you know, helped her get through it, ended up marrying her. So she's married to the brother for 25 years, and then he passes. And that's where the series opens up. Logan realizes that he's never stopped loving Kate. She's everything he's ever wanted. So he makes it his goal to win her back. And it takes 3 books to do it.
Yes.
I'll tell you, I just love the relationship between them. I love Kate. I just think she's incredible. And I like Logan because, you know, I tend to be partial towards bad boys. And he was a bad boy out the gate. And then, you know, he's in his 40s now, and he's on the board of supervisors in San Francisco. And he's a big deal. He owns a law firm. And he can get any woman he wants, but he wants Kate. And so he lays all that down, all the other women, everything, to try to pursue her. And I just think, you know, in the end, it's, you know, it's his love for Kate that brings him to Christ, which is, I don't know if it's the way it should be, but it's the way it worked out in this mm-hmm. series.
Yeah, I have to admit, Logan was my favorite. I loved the way you wrote him, how he came in, and he's so protective of his family.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's uncle to her kids, but he treats them as if they're his own. And I mean, he gets very protective, especially of his nieces.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, he spent, 25 years being a womanizer and, you know, living life on the high hog. But he comes to realize that family and true love and God are really the only things that sustain. And he comes late to it, but he comes strong to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I loved their relationship all the way through. Go ahead.
Oh, I what I really liked about it was I thought people were going to get mad at me, but you know, you resolve a romance at the end of the book, but not theirs. And I tend to try to do that. You know, I did that in my Isle of Hope series where, you know, you break it over three. It's just fun to have that other scenario going on. And mm-hmm. I didn't know how it was all going to work out, but boy, it did.
It did. And I don't think people get too upset because you have your primary love story gets wrapped up, but your secondary keeps going. Yeah. At least I enjoyed it. It was this like, is she ever going to trust him again? You know, are we ever going to get there?
I got a little mad at her in the third book. I did. Because I just recently read it because of my devotional, I use a lot of excerpts from all my books. So, you know, I mean, I can think of a few that I wanted to put in offhand, but I had to read a lot of the books to find them and go, oh my gosh, there's that one, and pull it out. So I reread the San Francisco series, which I never reread. I reread the, you know, the O'Connors all the time, but not the San Francisco series. So it was really fun. I just finished it like a couple weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah. So still fresh in your mind then.
Yeah. And in the third book, I was getting ticked at Kate. I was like, oh, give me a break. Come on. But I wrote her, you know, but that was her mentality. And that was part of the conflict, of course, that you had to have. So
mm-hmm. It's funny you say that because Jessica and I said the same thing. Like, we love Kate. She's solid. We love her faith. We love how she mentors her kids, especially in her niece, Cassidy.
Yeah.
As well, because they share similar heartache experiences.
Yes, they did.
And she's just a wonderful mentor. But then you're right about the third book. You're like, would you just trust him already?
Oh my gosh, give the guy a break. You know, throw him a bone.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, when I read it recently, I'm going, Julie, you know, you could have toned her down a little bit here, you know, but anyway.
I love it. I would say some of our side characters we love too were Lottie.
Oh, Lottie. Yeah.
She liked to be called Miss Lottie Da. She's adorable. Yeah. And then I can't remember the little boy's name. I feel bad. He was in Your Grace Like Rain. The blind boy who ran into Blake. Oh, that was always dressed kind of like a butler, you know, he's real proper.
And he would feel under the piano the vibrations.
Yes.
That's my favorite novella I've ever written. Yeah. I just love that novella, you know.
Yeah. I loved it too. It is one of my favorites. Although some of your
Christmas novellas?
Yes, thank you. I'm looking at my bookshelf to look at them. Some of those are my favorites too. So
yeah, more like novels than mm-hmm. little novels than novellas, in my opinion. I don't like novellas because I like to go long, you know.
Yeah.
But I when I started to see that I could write like a little novel in a novella, then that got me excited. So yeah, they're all little novels.
Yeah, I did have to ask the cook and the butler.
Oh, do you not love them?
Oh yes, we did. I mean, she's like Kate's dark guard dog, you know, when it comes to Logan.
Yeah, she's precious. And, you know, you never think she's going to love Logan ever.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
You know, it happens. And oh my gosh, Hadley. I loved Hadley. I had one more character in there, the Lily from France, when Meg comes back.
Yeah.
She came back with Meg. And I love taking her French accent, and she gets all these expressions wrong, you know, and I loved it, but my editor didn't. And she goes, I don't know, Julie, it's a little too. So I had to cut Lily, you know, but I misbehave the parrot.
Oh, yes. The parrot.
I had a parrot growing up. And I'm telling you, I taught that parrot to sing "I Love Pancho" in the springtime while he danced on the bar, and also "What's It All About, Pancho." I mean, he would sing that; he would say it and sing it. And so, I have a real affection for parrots. So that was fun to write.
Oh, we did love him too, because or her too, because the sayings they have to say about Blake.
And
every time she says auntie up, and then his mom's like, are you playing poker over there?
That was fun. I liked writing that family.
Yes. And I was going to ask you, like, we loved the family gatherings, all the meals they had together. Yeah. And of course, it's my sister-in-law and I who discussed it. And we were just talking about, you know, growing up, I always felt like we were a really close family. We did a lot of things. But as we've grown up, we've kind of drifted. Yeah, I said, and we read your books, and we both said, we really need to start doing family dinners again. So I was just curious where your inspiration for that comes from, because I see it in the O'Connor family too.
Yes.
And I saw it in the Silver Lining. It's a theme, really, I feel like, for your books.
The family theme. And that comes from the fact that I'm from a family of 13, but unfortunately, it was a very dysfunctional family of 13. I was number 12. And you'll see this in my devotional when you read it. The first 10 kids were in 12 years. I don't know how my mom did that, you know. But then the last three were like maybe 3 or 4 years apart, or 2 or 3 years apart. And then we were staggered. My youngest sister, Katie, was just to this day an amazing woman. She was like the only love I ever got growing up, because we shared a room, and I loved her dearly. But the problem was, my mom loved Katie and didn't like me. And so she'd pick on me. And I've told the story before. I know I probably told it to you, but you know, when I wrote my first book, I started A Passionless Pure. I started it when I was 12. And I wrote 300 pages, and I would read it to Katie every night, and she'd, Julie, read me your book. She loved it, you know? And so she said, let mama read it. And so I let mama read it, and I waited 2 or 3 days, and I went, and I finally said, Mom, so what do you think so far, you know? And I can't even believe she said this. I mean, I still rack my memory. Did that really happen? Yes, it did. She said, I'm sorry, Julie. She says, it was so dry, I couldn't get past the first page. And that was the relationship I had with my mom. I think because I was like her, maybe, and she didn't like that. So why did I go into that? Oh, I went into that because that's the dysfunctional family I had. My siblings made fun of me because I was like walking nervous breakdown, because I would do things like go out in the snow and pray for God to send them all to hell. I mean, I was a caffeinated drama queen. I was a CDQ. And as a result, my upbringing was very, very dysfunctional. So when I came to Christ, one of the things that I really wanted to heal, and I think I just really believe God used it in my Passion Most Pure, my first book. Yeah. He helped me write what I saw was, the family I always wanted to have. You know, it lots of problems, lots of emotions, but God is the strength, and bringing them all together. And that's the family I created. And you know what? That's the family I have today. My husband is just like Patrick and, the O'Connor father. And my kids, they were all very close like that and very spiritual. So, God does turn things around for you.
That is so awesome. So awesome to hear too. I was going to say, Patrick sounds like his background was similar to yours because his family was dysfunctional.
It was. Yeah. Cause his father, my dad beat me,
Yeah.
And he didn't beat Patrick, of course, because Patrick was too big, but he really tried to,
Yeah. Yeah. And then he got the family he wanted. I feel like he always wanted that. Oh, like he didn't want that dysfunction. Yeah.
Because Marcy was an only child and Patrick was kind of close to that too. So yeah, that's really what they wanted. And boy, that's why it was the perfect family for me, despite all the problems.
Yeah. I just love the family time that you have in there. And my sister said, we need to learn how to play cribbage. We've never played that.
I don't know how to play cribbage.
Okay.
I don't know how to play cribbage. I don't know how to do jiu-jitsu. I don't know how to do, any of those games. I are chess with Patrick. Oh my gosh, the whole family plays chess.
Yeah.
I had to study it and learn expressions and so that's how I did that. But I don't know how to do it.
Pinochle was the other one, right?
Oh, Peanut. Well, I do know Peanut. Oh, my God.
I've never played that either.
Keith's parents played Pinochle. I didn't want to do it, but I did for Keith. And so I know how to play Pinochle.
So we said, I think we're going to end. Did they play croquet out? Mm-hmm. I feel like they did that too. Yeah. So that was something that was really neat for my sister and I to connect on again. I'm glad you put it in there because my mom's parents are much older. They actually are like 2 years older than my great grandmother on my dad's side.
Okay.
Because what happened was my mom is like 16 years younger than her oldest brother.
Okay.
And what happened was my grandmother did not like the empty nest. So they had my mom when she was like 40.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So there's quite a age gap, but they always had croquet at their house. And I, when they passed away, I got the croquet set. And my sister goes, no way. I said, yes, I have it. We can set it up and play.
Oh my gosh.
I think we're going to do a weekend and have everybody come play. But thank you for putting that in because I think our families missed that. As, like I said, growing up, we were close and we always did things. The difference for us too is because of work, my dad moved 3 hours away from family. So it literally was just me and my five sisters and my parents. We didn't have, any other family around.
Yeah.
So it's different. But anyways, we appreciated that family dynamic that you put in there. We had some great discussions on that. So, so one of the other things, I guess we could kind of talk about this, because we kind of led into it either. You have a family theme throughout all your books, but I feel like in this series, you had a lot focused on, waiting for the right man to marry and making sure you're marrying a man of God. And then the power of prayer, I feel like was just woven throughout. So do you just want to share a little bit on those two nuggets of truth?
Well, I think probably the reason that was like my O'Connor series, which were, a total of six books. I mean, with Revell, That was the thrust of that was purity and waiting for the right guy, you know. And but what happened was I because they're a little bit more passionate at the time than other Christian books, I would get 1-star reviews and then I'd fall apart. And yeah. Keith would say, "Julie, you need to write a series that's totally different than your old kind of series, and it needs to be less spiritual," is what he told me, "and it needs to be less passionate," because he thought those two things turn people off. Because, you know, you get too spiritual and there's a lot of people who are going to go, "Well, no, uh-uh. No, yeah, she's extreme." Okay. Which is what's going to happen with my devotional. But okay. Anyway, so what I tried to do with this series is I moved it to the other coast to break away from the Boston and Eastern seaboard. And I didn't have a Mary. So it wasn't that family unit. And I tried to be less spiritual, and I definitely tried to be less passionate, you know, because there weren't any bedroom scenes.
Yeah.
You know?
And I just want to say real quick for anybody listening, your bedroom scenes are clean. They're not they're not the play-by-play things you get in other books. So.
Fade to black, like the old movies, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, there's nothing more than kissing, but I can write a kiss.
Yes, you can.
So, anyway, so your question was about the prayer and the purity. So I think what I did was I had to, those are two easy things to focus on. And like in the Daughters of Boston, I went into, what do you call it? Submission.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I did subjects like that kind of rocked the boat a little bit. And this one, I settled on safe, which were, you know, prayer, of course, and faith. And of course, you know, my tagline is passion with a purpose. So my whole thrust in writing books in the first place is to show young women and older women that the world's morality is not going to make them happy, and it's going to bring them down, and it's going to prevent what really will make them happy. So that's my thrust. So that's why I did that in this series. That's my strong point. That's my whole theme. But the prayer, you know, it's really all I could go into. I couldn't do spiritual warfare, you know, and stuff like that. So anyway, that's what I tried to do. I tried to tone both those things down because I felt like Keith felt like I would get less 1-star reviews and maybe it would be people would like it better. But I'll never forget, I got a letter from a diehard young single reader of mine. I don't like the word fan, but she was, you know, she really liked my books. And she did what's his name? Jamie in the pool room with Cassie, and he kisses her, you know, and mm-hmm. it's a pretty, he kind of grabs her and kisses her. My gosh, I got the most scathing letter from her, and I got a 1-star review from her. And she just said, "In today's world of date rape, that is just plain wrong what you did there." You know, I mean, really, she really attacked me, you know, and I can understand where she did. I don't begrudge her for it. That's her opinion. But I tried to, you know, I mean, I'm from that old generation, the John Wayne, Maureen O'Hara, you know, so sue me. You know, I can't help it that today is really awful, but I'm not going to change who I am, you know, and the way what I see is romance. That's my signature, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, yeah.
It's funny you mention John Wayne and Maureen. Yeah. I grew up, my dad's a huge John Wayne fan. So,
you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I totally get it. Yeah, he's just a take charge and I'm going to kiss you.
Yeah, McClintock, where he carries her, you know, he carries her down the street over his shoulder, you know. I mean, I don't know. You know, I think, especially today, with the demasculization of men today, you know, it's what do they call it? Toxic masculinity.
Crazy.
I'm sorry. I am so against that. God made each of us separately, you know, the two sexes separately and gave them each their, you know, their attributes.
Yeah.
And when you try to merge them together or mix them out, no. Uh-uh. So that's why I'm real strong on that. And I'm sorry if somebody didn't like it.
So I enjoyed it. But I understand there are some people that, and that's okay. As an author, you just have to say, that's fine. You are not the reader I'm targeting with this book. So
Exactly.
I will say, I think a lot of your John Wayne stuff comes out in your Silver Lining Ranch series. Are there any like fun facts or insights? You shared a little bit that you had Lily in there, but had to cut her out. Were there any other things like that, or that would be like kind of like behind the scenes?
Well, you know, one thing that I was kind of proud of that I did, I like to do a lot. I like to put historical facts in there. And of course, in book two, Dare to Love Again, you know, Nick, the hero, he teaches her how to play jiu-jitsu. I mean, not play.
Yeah.
He teaches her jiu-jitsu. And what was really, I needed something that he could teach her, but I didn't know what that would be. I thought it might be boxing, you know, because like Jamie was a boxer. But then I read where Teddy Roosevelt, he brought jiu-jitsu to the White House. Oh my gosh, he was such a character. And I loved reading about him. So that was, I put a lot of fun facts about that in there. And then of course the Sutro baths in, I'm trying to think which, that was in the first book, Sutro baths, and all these things that San Francisco had back in the 10,000, square, was it 10,000 square foot or was it 10,000 panes of glass? But it was like this enclosed swimming, facility. First one, it was like a wonder of the world, like one of the first ones, you know, in the world. And, that was fun. All that kind of stuff and putting all that in. I can't really think of anything that, you know, that I had to pull out. Like I pulled a lot out of the O'Connors because my editor got on me about a lot of stuff, but this one, not so much because I toned it down, you know, and you didn't have to pull a lot out, you know?
Yeah. But and you had the chocolate in there. I know you had Hershey bars because didn't Jamie really like the Hershey bars?
He liked Hershey
bars. Then did you do Ghirardelli with Nick?
Yes, I did because, you know, again, I try to jump on what's right with some of the local things, you know. And what's so amazing about that when you do that, and I'm sure you see this in your own book, you know, or books, you start to do write a story and then you do a little research and you find out little things and oh my gosh, how cool. And you put it in and it fits in the story like a glove, you know, like Foster Grant sunglasses when they first came out. Sunglasses, what are those, you know, in my O'Connor book, but it worked perfectly because it was, you know, Emma ran the store, you know, a department store. And so they were the first ones to get it, not Filene's, which is an actual, you know, department store, you know, in Boston, you know. So anyway, things like that, I just love. I like tossing them in.
I loved, we loved the animal crackers too, that Nick always ate to help his stomach.
You know, it's funny how you just start to do that stuff. I knew that I needed to make him quirky because he was a little bit of a caveman, and grouchy. And so I had to make, and that's how you soften him. You make him quirky, you know, and I thought the animal crackers did that really well. So.
Yeah, that was one of, I think that book, their story was Jessica's favorite. She just loved their combative, how they were, you know, the names they would come up for each other and or call each other. And
You know, it's funny. That was my least favorite of the books. But when I reread it recently, I didn't want to reread it. That shows you how, I mean, I liked Love at Any Cost, and I love the last one, Surprised by Love. I guess Logan and Kate get together, but. But when I read Dare to Love Again, I thought, oh my gosh, this is not bad. This is good.
Yeah. No, it is. I enjoyed all four. Well, it's the three novellas and or novels and then the novella. I'm glad you went back and gave Blake a story and let him get redeemed.
He really needed that because he's the lovable rogue throughout all, you know, three books. And you just don't want him leave there because, you know, there's depth there. Mm-hmm. There's depth, but it just doesn't come out very often. And yeah. that was fun to maybe match him up with Miss Peabody.
Yeah. And she's so sweet. I loved her character throughout. She was always that quiet. There's always someone barging into the law firm, right? And always. She's the one yeah. that's like, oh, please, sir, no, don't, you know, I'm so sorry, I couldn't stop him. You know, she's just this sweet little girl.
I love the line where Nick comes in and scares the pajeebers out of her. She's up against the door like she was sweating glue.
Oh, bless her heart. She was sweet. You also put a lot of twists, I think, in this series. As far as like...
Yeah.
Did you think... We tried not to give too many away when we talked through it. But I will tell you, which one? The first one. I can't see.
Love at Any Cost.
Love at Any Cost. Yes, thank you. The twists at the end, there's like two big twists at the end, caught us off guard. How did you come up with those? I mean, did you know it before you started writing, or do you just write and it came?
Well, I write synopses. You know, I write like a detailed 7-page synopsis that reads like a novel. Like a lot of my dialogue, I'll put it in there because it comes to me and I'll throw it in there and I kind of build on that. It doesn't always go the way I write the synopsis, but mostly it's pretty close. I knew, this series, what I wanted to call it was the Cousins McClare. Yeah, that's what I wanted to call it. And Revell didn't like that. They didn't want that. I really wanted it, the Cousins McClare, because the whole idea for it, they're cousins, you know? Mm-hmm. And I knew that, you know, I had to somehow, you know, make that all work, you know? So, I mean, I think I had that idea probably from the beginning, but then I didn't know, you know, I didn't necessarily know some of the things like Logan. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't necessarily till you get in and then it all starts to come together. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those were great twists. And then the twist with Nick was, I didn't see it coming. There's like these little mystery hints that you put in and you keep going, who is this? I think it's DeLuca, maybe. Yeah, I'm like, who is this guy? What is going on with this?
Yeah, is it good or bad? Yeah.
Yeah. And then Logan comes in and drops this bomb on Allison.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, what? and you know there's an explanation coming, right? Because Allison and Nick have to get together. And that went through us for a loop, too. We really...
Yeah, what about the third one? The surprise by love? Those not... Oh, my gosh. When she's running up the steps and she falls.
Yes.
And her folder, you know, just goes all the way. I mean, I was shocked by that. I went, oh.
That's one of those that just came out as you were writing.
It shocked me first, and then I was able to shock my readers.
Yeah. Oh, I could see it. But I was so thankful because, you know, as readers, we're all screaming, don't marry him.
I mean, he's a nice guy. He's a great guy, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And I honestly thought maybe Devin had changed. I didn't think she'd end up with them, but I thought maybe he had changed. So that whole twist too was.
Yeah. Here's the thing with Devin. I actually liked Devin. I ended up liking Devin a lot. And I kind of thought in my mind's eye, I would write a novella or maybe another novel between Devin and Jamie's sister, Jess, because she's going to be a lawyer too. Okay. And Devin, and so that's, I mean, in my mind's eye, I could see them having a novella or a story, you know?
I would love to see Jess get a happy ending. I love her. She's so sweet.
Oh, she's very sweet. Yeah. She's kind of like a sweet of Miss Peabody, but not quite as shy. She's got more gumption to her, you know?
Yeah. And Jessica and I both said when we were reading that scene, we thought that it was going to be Andrew in there.
You want to hear something?
Yeah.
I'm rereading it and I couldn't remember. I couldn't remember. And I'm going, you know, who was it?
So you thought the same thing then. That's good.
I'm embarrassed. Look at I'm red.
It's okay.
Because, well, you got to understand, I wrote this a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, you've read a lot, or not read, but written a lot of books since.
Yeah.
So.
And I didn't reread these much. Even though I liked them, I didn't reread them much. But I remember thinking, you know, just what the heck? How did I go with that? Which way did I go? You know? So, yeah, I can see where you would be surprised.
Yeah. Well, because we kept waiting for that break between Caitlin and Andrew. And I thought, oh, this is going to be it. This is it. And it was not it.
Yeah. And that's so fun. I love putting little twists. I like to think I'm kind of known for twists, mostly in my O'Connor books, because there's always a twist. You know, I'll never forget one reader wrote me and she said, oh my gosh, Julie, I'm sitting there reading, I forget which one it was, but she says, my husband's sleeping and I'm sitting there reading with a little pen light. She says, and all of a sudden she says, I get to one of your twists. And she says, she sat right up and went, holy crap. I said, well, I'm sorry. You know, I made you guess, but or wake your husband up. Cause he was like, you know. Anyway, I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
You like to do that to your readers, you know.
You know, that is funny. My husband always says, honey, they're fictional characters. Okay, calm down.
I know. When I would read, it's funny, I would reread my books. Like, before I would write the next one in the O'Connor series, I'd always reread the others. Because, you know, it really kind of refreshes you and gets you back familiar to them, you know. And I would be reading, you know, and Keith goes, you know, babe, when are you going to turn the light out? Because back then I didn't have a Kindle. And I said, I just got a couple more pages. I said, I just got to find out what happens in this chapter. I just got to find out what happens.
that's great.
Roll his eyes and roll over, you know, like, oh.
Oh, yeah. The twist in Blake's story. So he's about ready. He wants to propose, and then that guy comes storming in and drops a bomb on him about.
Yes. Yeah. I thought that that would be kind of, people would get that and think that, or, you know, catch that it wasn't much of a twist. But you thought it was a twist.
I thought it was, because I thought, I couldn't figure out how it would get fixed, I guess, if it was true.
Yeah.
Because he was going to do the honorable thing.
Yes, he was.
Which meant giving up the woman he actually loves.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I did say I stole a little bit of that idea for my second book, but I play it out far different. Far different, because in my second book for my series, he's like Blake. He's a real rogue. I mean, but then he found God and he's like, okay, I'm going to make this right. And he finds a woman that he falls in love with, and
same thing.
Gone. But he actually has to face the music, because it's really his. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's a little different, but it gave me an idea there. So. But it was good. We loved all four of the stories. So, if you write one for Jess, I would love to read it.
Yeah, probably a novella, I'm thinking, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. And you've mentioned your devotional a little bit, and I know you said you just finished it, hoping to get it out in October. Do you want to share a little bit about that one?
The devotional I didn't want to write. I can't tell you how much I kicked and screamed the whole time. I mean, it's been 2 years in the making, because I wouldn't do it. I mean, God pretty much told me. What happened was, and I tell this, of course, in the devotional, but I hate nonfiction. I hate reading it. I hate writing it. People give me books all the time, nonfiction books. Oh, Julie, this is so good. And I can't finish them. I get in a quarter of the way and I'm done, you know. I want to be like Jesus told parables. Tell me stories. Teach me through stories. Don't teach me through, you know, nonfiction. I don't want that. So this was so difficult, and I bucked them left and right. I mean, initially my son said, you know, Mom, tell the kids, my kids, your Herb story. And it was a workplace story after I became a Christian. And it's a really good story. And I'm thinking, you know, they're 6, 8, and 10. They're not going to want to hear this. That's what I'm thinking. You know, we're outside around the fire pit. And I said, well, you know, okay. So I'm telling them the story. And when I'm done, I'm thinking, good, that's done. And they, Juju, tell us another story. Juju, tell us more. All week, it was, Juju, do you have any more stories? Juju, tell a story. And I remember thinking, wow. Anyway, so then I go to a Bible study, and it's on forgiveness. And my good friend who's leading it says, oh, Julie's got a story. She wrote a novel, Isle of Hope, on forgiveness. You know, Julie, tell them about your story between your dad and you and how God taught you to heal it, you know. And my dysfunctional relationship with my estranged father. So I'm telling it, and I, of course, I get tears in my eyes. And there's like 25 women in her living room, and I'm back by the kitchen bar, and they're all turning around, and I see a lot of them are crying too, you know. And I thought, well, I guess I can tell a story. So I'm walking out the door, and two gals gang up on me, and the one looks at me, and she goes, "You need to write a memoir or your biography." And I'm going, "What?" I said, "Oh." No, I said, yes, I was a wild child of the 70s. I said, yes, I got into witchcraft and drugs. I mean, I got into all that stuff, but I wasn't trafficked. I'm not really heavy into any of that stuff. You know, it was just, I just kind of went through it before I became a Christian. And I said, so I'm thinking, I don't have a story.
Yeah.
Warrant a biography, you know? So anyway, but she wouldn't take no for an answer. She goes, no. She says, you listen to me right now. She said, that story you just told taught me more about forgiveness than any Bible study I've been to, than any sermon I have ever heard. She says, you need to write those down. And the other gal goes, yeah, Julie, I'm telling you, you need to. And I said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll pray about it, you know? So I go back, and the next day I'm praying about it out of duty. I don't want to do it. I say, they think I should write this. I don't think so. So you're going to have to prove it to me. And all of a sudden I get this overpowering desire to read one of the scenes in my O'Connor book. It's a really powerful scene. And so I'm reading it, and I thought, this is stupid. The whole time I'm looking up the document and reading, I'm thinking, this is stupid. I'm reading it. Next thing I know, I'm sobbing. I mean, I'm just drenched with tears. And my husband comes out, and he's alarmed. He goes, what's wrong? And I said, I read this story. And so I said, okay, God, all right. Yeah, you had my son and my grandkids like my story. You had the Bible study, yeah. And yes, this did affect me. I said, but I'm sorry. You're going to have to give me one more reason to write this, because I don't want to write it. And within 1 hour, I got an email from a new reader that said, dear Mrs. Lessman, I just had to write you. I finished Hope and Dawn. And she says, and I got to tell you, your book has changed my spiritual life. As she goes on, she says, since reading it, I find myself in situations doing what you said. And she says, oh, she says, you've changed my life. She says, I just want you to know what eternal impact your books have. And I'm sobbing. And I went, okay, already, I'll do it. But I didn't do it. But I started it. And then I finished Henry's story, because that's where my heart is, in novels. Mm-hmm. And after Henry's story, I didn't know what I was going to write next. Well, it always comes to me, Melissa. God always gives me, not this time. Mm-mm. I have no idea. And I'm lost. And he basically told me, God, to, you know, I mean, through the Holy Spirit, just basically said, I ain't giving you squat until you finish this book. I mean, and it was like pulling teeth. I cannot tell you. Longest book it ever took me to write. And it's the shortest book I ever wrote. And so anyway. That's my, and it's, I do think that it's probably got a very powerful spiritual impact, because I was so attacked. I was so attacked when I was writing it. I can't tell you. I mean, depression, all kinds of stuff, you know? And I think it's because I'm a very simple person. I'm a 1-2-3 person. Don't give me a lot of stuff. Just give me 1-2-3 points that I can follow. And that's what this book does. I tell my real story, how God taught me the spiritual lesson, whether it was with raising my kids, or it was during my single life, or whether it was in my marriage, and give me the points that I do. And anyway, so that's what I did. I have the real story, then I have the novel story where I teach my characters the scene, and then I have the scripture story, all the scriptures that relate, and then I have the takeaway, which are the 1, 2, 3 points, what to do in this situation, and then I ended up with a prayer. So it's a very dirt practical, very bottom line book, and for people that, you know, just, you know, like me, they're a little bit on the quirky side, and they want to know how to apply it. How do you apply God's word? And that's what this is.
That's wonderful. And I think that'll probably have more impact than even your novels. You know what I think? I know you're nervous about it and a little bit, but just hearing your process through it, it's clearly God-given, and it's going to be God-driven once it leaves your hands. So
whether I like it or not, it was anointed. And I cried through editing the whole thing. So I keep saying, all my family and friends say the same thing. Julie, this is the book. This is the one, you know, and I go, I just don't see it. I mean, I'll be lucky if I sell a handful of them. That's kind of how I feel, you know. But, you know, the bottom line is, it's his book. Let him do with it what he wants.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it's packed full of a lot of the truth we need to hear today anyways. So.
Yeah.
So thank you for being obedient and writing that.
Yeah, but now we got to pray what I write next. I don't know what to write next, Melissa.
Oh, and
if I don't have a novel to write, I tend to get really down.
Yeah. I'm sure it will come to you once this is final and wrapped up. So
yeah.
I have no doubt that, and I know I've signed up for your newsletter, and I know you just sent out a recent post.
Yeah.
Through that. So just go to your website, julielessman.com to get.
And if you go to the blog, if you go to julielessman.com and scroll all the way to the bottom, you can sign up for my newsletter and you can sign up for my blog. And in the blog, all you have to do is up on the right hand corner, there's a box that says you put your email. And then what happens is every time I do post a blog, which is not all that often, you'll get an email with it. And then you can come and look at it, you know, if you want to.
Okay.
So, there's that. I only do like 2 newsletters a year. Isn't that terrible? And this newsletter, I'm getting ready to send one out. But it's basically the same information that I'm so lazy when it comes to writing nonfiction. I don't want to do it. And this is nonfiction. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So it'll be the same information with just a little bit more added and stuff, you know.
Okay. Okay. And we can, listeners can follow you on Facebook and Instagram, correct?
Yeah. Facebook, Instagram, X.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much, Julie, for joining us and sharing, giving some great insights. So.
Well, thanks for reading my books. I appreciate it.
Oh, yes, of course. We love your books. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I would like to invite you to connect with us further and get a free read. Right now, if you sign up for our newsletter, you will get the first 9 chapters of my book, Unwavering Faith. Plus, you'll receive news about our events for both readers and authors. You can sign up at literaryscape.com/newsletter. Until next time, happy and blessed reading and writing.